Welcome to this week's edition of Southern Porches. We start off with Roger and myself talking about age, purpose, and the growth of entrepreneurship. About age and purpose, and when do you find your purpose, when do you stop your purpose. So we are going to officially welcome everybody to the episode today, Friday the 13th.
Coronavirus day.
Yeah, we did not close. We're here.
Oh, Lord. So, what a mess.
And we are seeing a lot of anxiety and stress out there. Again, feel free to go to our Facebook page, which I finally got right at the end of the last episode, is Southern Porch Life on Facebook.com. And share what your experience has been with the last 2 weeks and what's going on. But prior to you joining us right now on the porch, as I said, Roger and I were having some good conversations about ageism, age. You know, do you still have a purpose at our age? And yes, we do. I'll give you the answer to that one already. And hopefully,
well, and I like, and you guys didn't hear this before the episode started, but Rick really hit the nail on the head when he said, we possibly have 20 more years to go, and I don't think we were equipped for that idea. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I thought, I can remember my grandfather at 65 was dead.
Yeah.
I mean, he lived a hearty life, he was involved, he was going, and he just had a heart attack, and that was it. He was gone.
Right, or the old, your dad was in publishing, right?
Right, yeah. He was in the newspaper
business. And my dad was in corporate America, and the model back then is, you get your pension, you get your retirement, and at 65, you're done.
Yeah, I mean, he went to a little old hole-in-the-wall area in Hugo, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. down by the Texas-Oklahoma border, and lived there till he died. Mm-hmm. That was it. I mean, he was at the end. He had gotten some cows and some chickens and had a little farm and was doing that and living like a hillbilly. I was like, whoa! I would never guess that, but that's what made sense to him. That's what he wanted to do. That's what he did. He was not in any way, shape, or form involved in publishing or the public relations business. He just let that go at a time. And now I can see why he did, because in some areas you don't have to let go. They let go of you. Mm-hmm. They don't let you back. If they can get you out the door, they lock the door. They don't let you come back in to play.
And that's the discussion you and I were having a little bit. It is even today's culture, the idea of the wisdom you gain in your 60 plus years, the idea of the experience you gain, still seems to be not relevant, because you are of a certain age versus being young right out of college. And I know there's some things related to that regarding financial side. And with the Affordable Care Act, it's cost a lot more to bring on somebody over 55 than it does to bring somebody on at 25. And so there are some financial impacts. But I see the same thing. It's, really, okay, you got this experience, so what? You got this education, so what? You're 65 years old, 66 right. years old, and we can't afford you.
So. Right. And one of the things that's kind of interesting looking at the internet is the idea that through your life experiences, you can turn that into a course and teach others, mm-hmm. and sell that and hopefully make enough money to keep going. But I think that is something new and something that's being sold out there to people, that if the system won't hire you, start your own. And there's a real push to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I certainly wish that I had had that spirit growing up. Now it's like I'm not in the mindset of being an entrepreneur. I'm in the mindset of being a worker. But what do you do when you're at an age, nobody's going to hire you. And you're like, okay, here we are. And so And it's just so funny through the internet how people, you know, sell an incredible amount of wealth with an incredible amount of ease with something you already have or something they can give you. And but they're going to charge. So you can see, wow, thanks to this 1,000 people, they're going to be wealthy. And so I think that's a, that then reminded me of
multi-level marketing.
Multi-level marketing. Yeah. And I always remember my wife saying, well, I get it, but when I really look at it, the only people who really make any money are the people at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people at the top, they get real wealthy. But the people at the bottom work and produce and do everything and come away poor, and then it's discovered what it is, and it falls. Well, the people at the top still got a lot of money. The people at the bottom are poor and destitute because of it. So that kind of seems to be the issue. And it's hard. It's hard to find. And again, I think, and again, you and I grew up at the same time, basically in the same area. You know, there's a certain element of being taught. You know, how you're being taught, what you're being taught, what story you're being told. And I find myself as I get older saying, I was never taught that.
Mm-hmm.
That was not something that was, you know, it's funny that it through high school, not one course on relationships.
Or communication,
yeah. And as you live life, 99% of everything you do is that.
Yep.
Or is involved in that. Budget. Oh my goodness. You know, was that stress? Not at all. And I think you put it beautifully. 65, you get the watch, you get the house, and you go and smoke a cigar on the patio, and there's your life. That's what we were taught, and that doesn't even exist. And if it does, it's such a minor element of what's out there. You know, the rest of the crowd is humping it, trying to, you know, pay taxes. That's where they are.
Right, and even if you did or still think that that's the life or the world out there, the other thing is, you do that at 65 and you're dead at 66 because you lost purpose in life.
Oh, and you know what? But that makes me think of Rick. I got to jump in here. Bear Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the greatest coaches at Alabama, really was driven. And so they asked him to retire. So he did. And within a year, he's gone. He dies because he doesn't have any purpose. Now, this is one of the greatest of the greats. But without purpose, That's a death sentence. That's a how you do moment right there. I thought, ooh.
And then contrary to that, there's been so much shown that when you do have purpose, and I'm thinking right now of Alex Trebek on Jeopardy.
Oh yeah.
Who is stage 4
pancreatic cancer.
But you know what? He went into it with a positive attitude. He's going to beat it, he said. But more, I think really what's kept him going so long, he's already beat the odds of what the lifespan is of somebody with stage 4, is he knows he has to get up and do his job, which is a show, but he's not, as I understand it, he's never missed one show yet.
Right.
And so... As you listen to the next segment, what are your thoughts? Are routine and purpose important in life? But he's not, as I understand it, he's never missed one show yet.
Right.
And so that is, I think, also
that's
him.
Powerful. That's powerful. Getting that, you know, just, and what I think in that, Rick, is the power of routine. Mm-hmm. You know, that we make, you know, routine. You get up, you brush your teeth, you put on your clothes, you go out the door. Big deal. Well, when you're young, maybe that is a big deal. But as you get older, It is a life deal. It's not a big deal. It's how, with Alex, that's exactly what's going on. His routine is keeping him alive. And his choice to embrace the routine. Mm-hmm. And this is it. And this is what I want to do. And then do it has kept him alive. And I think that's a very powerful statement to us of what's your routine? Do you have a routine? You know?
If you think about how much of our life is routine, and people could, I think, correlate routine with being bad.
Yeah.
But actually, it's not, because you're right. We do. We get up, we brush our teeth, we get up the same time each day, we brush our teeth the same way each day, we go to work the same road each day. And guess what? There's nothing wrong with that type. It's what routine is. Look at what's happening in the world right now with the United States, and people are, how much anxiety is being driven right now because routines are being broken.
Oh.
You can't go to a sports game, yeah.
Woo wee. I mean, I'm just thinking, boy, when I heard that they were not going to allow people come to the Final Four mm-hmm. basketball games, I said, wow. Or they were not having a music festival down in Austin. And I knew that music festival every year made thousands and thousands of dollars for those people. I'm like, woo. Boy, that is a tough moment. And I think that's probably a good thing to say on the show about age. That's what's going to happen. That's what happens, is you don't expect it. Something comes up. You're going to have to make a tough call. You don't want to make the call, but you've got to make the call. And your attitude in that, you know, because when you're 30 or 40, there is a push by whomever you're with of, you have value, you mm-hmm. can't go anywhere, we want you here. And as you get older, that stops. It's like, you got to go, bye. Love you, mean it, bye. There's not an important draw to keep you, an internal feeling of, I have value, and the feeling of, they can't do without me. Wow. The older you get, let me tell you, they way can do without you. And also, a piece of this too, Rick, is when you're young, you have value. And as far as physical value, and we worship youth and how wonderful youth is. And then people get older, and it's like, well, all the stuff that was put into value, I can't produce anymore. I can't be 20 years old. I can't be thin like I'm 20 years old. I can't have the energy I have at 20 years old. I can't deal with life as 20 years old. And I was reading something on the internet, and it said the things that used to be, I forget it now.
And our memory's not quite as good.
Yeah, there goes my memory. But the whole idea was, what we used to say, oh, you're a fuddy-duddy if you do that, is today your way of life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can remember when you never even went to a party till 9 or 10 at night. Mm-hmm. It didn't even start till then. And my thinking now is, that's when I go to bed. Mm-hmm. If I don't go to bed, then tomorrow I'm going to suffer because I did that. And your body's ability to absorb alcohol is great. If you hit it at that level now, Lord day, you're going to wake up and you're still going to be drunk. It's crazy, you know. And also another thing I remember is falling when you're young. You know, that we grew up in a culture where it was rub it off.
Yeah.
If you fell, I mean, if you were going at 90 miles an hour, you fell, you tumbled, a major accident, the response was, you know, are you okay? And then rub it off. You were expected to get up and get with it. And as you get older, if you fall, you're not getting up like you used to get up. It's like, oh, bud, this is rough. This is rough.
You got to push your button. Help. Oh. Help, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Oh, that's right. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, that you begin to see, and maybe that's part of the program today, the power of adjustment with ageism. The power that some people are very powerful in adjusting. They just say, I never expected to know this. I admit that I don't know this. And I'm going to try to get with the new thing as much in my age and my place and everything I can get with it. You know?
Yeah. Well, the power of adjustment, yes, in conjunction with the power of acceptance.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good piece. That's so cute. You're right.
Because a lot of people will not go through and accept the reality of life sometimes, being that, yeah, I'm 60-some years old, and yes, when I wake up in the morning, I got some aches I didn't have when I was 20 years old.
Yeah. And another thing, I can remember going through all my 30s, 40s, 50s, never drinking coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee, I didn't think of it, never had a factor. And now, I got to have at least a couple of cups in the morning to get my motor running.
Yep.
It's like, gee whiz, man. And that's the new routine. But I think finding your zone is, I think, important. And this is a thing. Because my wife lives here, grew up here in South Carolina, and I grew up in Oklahoma. She's always asking me, which drives me crazy, don't you want to go back to Oklahoma? And I'm like, no. I said, I love it. I don't have a... And our grandson says, well, you like the football team. I bet you want to go back. And I'm saying, well, no.
They got this thing called TV.
Well, the thing is that it's not really the state, but your youth, the cool things of your youth, good memories, good times. And if I thought I could get in a plane or a car or whatever and go, and those good times would be there, then I'd be there. But I have gone back and thought, that was probably what, going back to the class reunions and thinking, I wasn't so hot on these people when I was young. And here I've spent all this time, money, and energy to come, and they've all grown older. So you're like, I'm a fool. What was it? But there's some people that go, boy, it's just not as the best. It's great. My sister does that. Drives me crazy. Like, good. It's crazy. But that's just the way it is. That's, some people got a zone for it, and some don't. But... you know, I can remember startling my sister when I said, I don't know, now that our mother's gone, that I'll ever go back to Oklahoma for the rest of my life. And you could tell it stunned her. She was like, what? And I said, I don't have a high need to go back and be in the middle of that. Because the Oklahoma I grew up isn't there anymore.
I was doing that just today. I moved here in 1986 to Greenville. Wow. And I was trying to figure out why is it become... I still love Greenville, but what about the stressors of the traffic and everything? And so, of course, I had to go to Google and look at the population of Greenville. In 1986, the population of Greenville was 186,000 people. Today it's 529,000 people. So 500% increase. Now, okay, that's it. So you're right. And the Oklahoma of the 50s and 60s and 70s is not the Oklahoma of today. And just as the Greenville of the 80s and 70s is not the Greenville today.
Yeah, my sister says, you know, the place we grew up and the high school we went to isn't anything like when we were young and there. And so a piece of me goes, well, then why would I want to go back to see our house doesn't look like it used to be? And the high school doesn't look like it used to look, and it runs differently. That's like I want to take a trip and spend money to be disappointed. What? I'm not hot on that. And it's funny, I moved into Greenville in 1990, and I remember, that this is always a vivid memory here, is the East Main area.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, you took your life in your own hands. It was ghetto. It was dangerous. You could easily be shot if you crossed that river. And, you know, just up the road, you can now play baseball. It's like...
As we finish up with this last segment, what adjustments have you been making in your life? What was different when you were younger, and what adjustments have you had to make as you grew older?
And you could tell it stunned her. She was like, "What?" And I said, "I don't have a high need."
Mm-hmm.
To go back and be in the middle of that, because the Oklahoma I grew up isn't there anymore.
I was doing that just today. I moved here in 1986 to Greenville. Wow. And I was trying to figure out why is it become. I still love Greenville, but what about the stressors of the traffic and everything? And so of course I had to go to Google and look at the population of Greenville. In 1986, the population of Greenville was 186,000 people. Today, it's 529,000 people. So, 500% increase. Now, okay, that's so you're right. And the Oklahoma of the 50s and 60s and 70s is not the Oklahoma of today. And just as the Greenville of the 80s and 70s is not the Greenville today.
Yeah, my sister says, you know, the place we grew up and the high school we went to isn't anything like when we were young and there. And so a piece of me goes, well, then why would I want to go back to see our house doesn't look like it used to be, and the high school doesn't look like it used to look, and it runs differently. That's like I want to take a trip and spend money to be disappointed. What? I'm not hot on that. And it's funny, I moved into Greenville in 1990, and I remember, that this is always a vivid memory here, is the East Main area.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, you took your life in your own hands. It was ghetto. It was dangerous. You could easily be shot if you crossed that river. And, you know, just up the road, you can now play baseball. It's like, what?
Or watch baseball. I don't think either one of us will make the team.
Oh God, wrong. Oh, you're wrong. That's true. Oh, that's it. Yes, we can watch baseball. Yeah. So it's so different. So different. And again, it's about adjusting. Mm-hmm. It is so much about and accepting of saying, I think that's important to say, you know, Greenville, especially with Suzanne, my wife, you know, she rode horses where Haywood Mall is. That's what she grew up with. So you can imagine what Greenville, how much it's changed since she's a little girl. Like, goodness gracious.
Yep.
You know, and it's changed from 86 or 90 when we came in. It's changed. And it's accepting, okay, that's just what it is, and this is just where we are. And
and you're right, the adjusting is, it brings good and bad. The good is the area you speak of, for those who have not been to Greenville, is now internationally recognized. It's written up in
magazines
and so forth. But yeah, we do have a lot more traffic than we
And you know, there comes, I think one of the things that's interesting hanging around a lot of old Greenvillians is the idea of the tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, we're okay, but, you know, we're glad for the growth, but, there comes a point where, since we're speaking of it, one of the great examples of all this is Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you go to Charleston, you're going to see things that were there in 17-something, just like it was now. And I was watching a documentary on New York City on TV, and they were talking about making it acceptable for traffic flow, and they were talking about what they were looking to tear down. And finally, the New York people said, no, we don't care if we don't grow like this. We don't care. I mean, they realized there were some choices in that, but they said, this area, these old things, mm-hmm. are meant to be preserved.
Right, yeah.
You know, and so we have to make a focus to do that. And I think that's personally for everybody out there, people listening, is to realize you need to look at what you want to save. You know, it isn't like, you know, every year, get a big box, put it in front of your house, put crap in it, and throw it away. What's going to happen is, in a couple of years, you're going to regret that you did mm-hmm. that. I have noticed that. But I know that there's some people that really go and, you know, they want to have a clean house. They don't want it to pile up and look like they're in hoarding land. But they really look at, does this serve a purpose? Is this a good remembrance for us? This picture or this couch or this chair or whatever. And when they do that, what comes to my mind is Charleston. I mean, they have really worked. They have had some people there who've really worked hard, you know.
Oh, yeah, they've done a great job in the preservation of their...
Yes, and you go there and it is delightful. Oh, I love it. It's delightful, and I look forward to going back because of the preservation that's going on there.
But again, they doesn't mean that they haven't been able to experience the growth and the modernization too. You get outside of downtown Charleston and up in North Charleston and West of Ashley and so forth, and they're like any other community. They got their growth, they got their modernization, they got the things that are going on. But you're right.
And you have to find that balance, and that's not only in the city of Charleston, but that's in our own lives.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the balance?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the balance? Are you seeking the balance? And it's a proactive structure. You have to be purposeful in doing it. You have to say, I'm going to purposely look to the future. I'm purposely going to set things up to work in a particular way. And I think back in the day, people didn't have to do that because they just kind of, you know, work. Got 65, coasted, and went to the funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was really the style of old school,
mm-hmm.
of how that works. But I just do not see it like that anymore. I don't see people doing that. And I do not see a large group of people wanting to sit on the porch, you know, to go and just hang somewhere. That's very odd. For me to say, I think people want to be, and that's why I think we have really seen a push for entrepreneurship. People going to have their own business, can't fire me from that old business, doesn't matter, and I'm going to do it till I die, then I'm going to give it to people. What they do with it, that's their business. But until I die, I'll be able to do this stuff and contribute. And I think that's, it, you know, in anything, I think it's important to contribute, to feel like you're making a difference.
Well, you know, and when we first talked about the porch, we that's all we wanted to do is just kind of figure out a way of creating connections and just talking about life. And yet you're right. You know, I think in one of the earlier sessions we talked about what happened to the front porch. And, you know, as we understand it, before there was air conditioning, the front porch was there so you could go out in the evening and be cool and whatever. But then air conditioning came and the front porch disappeared because now we moved everybody inside. And then if we wanted to go outside, we went to the backyard. So the backyards became bigger. Yet, looking at even what's happening today, we're by losing the front porch, we have lost connection in many ways with our community, our neighbors, our families. And what I mean by that is ask yourself, how many people really know who their neighbors are? How many people, know about the community?
And then the
scary thing right now is, you know, as we're talking about the coronavirus, that's part of what we're talking about, what's going on right now.
Yeah.
They're saying, you know, it's our age that's it's hitting the hardest. And so what do they say you do? Well, you know, if you're thinking about going to visit your parents, you might want to stop thinking about, hey, these are the people that are being most isolated already.
Yeah.
And now they're telling you. And now they're telling
you. Isolate them more.
Yeah, now they're telling you, you got this thing going on. And so, I don't know.
It's tough. And that's part of what the Southern Porch is about, is talking about tough stuff that people aren't talking about. Yeah, we're not in denial. We're not sitting there thinking there's no virus out there. We're just looking at the give and take of it. Yeah. What are we just generally going to fear something and knee-jerk that we're going to later come back and look at and go, what were we thinking? That's a stupid idea, you know? And that's part of what you're saying here. We're going to take an isolated group and isolate them more. And is that good mental health? And you and I well know, no, that is crappy mental health. And that's going to cause a lot of resentment, a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, because it's important for people to connect. And that's at the heart of Southern Porch. It's about connection. This show's about connecting, about how we remember a time in which there was no internet, there was at some point much TV. You know, you had three channels and an Indian sign at a certain part of night. But the real interaction were people who would sit on the porch and talk and share their lives with other people. And that was emotional food that nourished these people, you know. And how, especially in a small town, how you knew people, mm-hmm. you know. And for the most part now, we're lucky if we know anybody from any place doing anything. And I tell you, and I've said this before, Rick, and this has just been harsh reality for me and hard, is I never realized that when we came to the internet that hate would thrive.
Mm-hmm.
That evil, mean, I just didn't realize that the heart of people was such a meanness. I didn't grow up with that. I didn't grow up around that. I grew up in a culture where people helped each other out of the ditch. They didn't sit and make a deal about the ditch. They just said, what can we do to help you get out of the ditch? We know you don't want to be there. What can we do? And sometimes, which is interesting, people would just say, I just need someone to listen.
Mm-hmm.
I just need someone to think, to let me know I've been heard. That is what's going to help me out of the ditch. And I think that's true today. I think a lot of people are in the ditch of life because they have created an environment of isolation. Believing it really is going to get them somewhere, when in fact it was going to get them in the ditch.
Yeah, or isolation's been created, again, as we talk about, because of some issue, be it age or health or whatever, and you're right, but that is it. I mean, healing begins the moment we are heard. People just need to be heard.
That's a good sign on your office here. And healing begins the time you are heard. Well, that'll preach right there. I like that. I've never heard that. But I like that a lot. Yeah.
Because a lot of times that's all we need is someone to know
that
they're They're listening to us.
But we're creating everything you and I'm talking about today on this program has been about, you know, separation.
Mm-hmm.
Is about creating environments to isolate people. And when we're both sitting here saying, oh yeah, bad plan. And, you know, that there's people. And I was looking at the internet the other day. It was so excited to see someone saying, I'm going to go down and have Sunday after church lunch with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And that just brought up some of the best memories to me that I could even remember. I thought, oh yeah, I remember the day. And so, but you know, that takes vision, that takes purpose. You've really got to set your head in the right place to do this, or before you know it just gets on by, you know.
Yep. But what do we prioritize in life? That's going to be...
Ooh, that's a good one, too. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. There it is. What do we prioritize in life? Boy, at the end, much of what we prioritize, you know, is nothing. It, you know, dust in the wind. Ooh, it just goes. But I think you've got to... And then that's probably what this program's about, is making informed, important choices.
Mm-hmm.
And us going, this is one of those things that make you go, huh? You know, they're not teaching this in school. You're not going to get a class in it. You're probably not around people that talk about it. But if you had an ear in the porch, you know, if we recreated that, this is what they'd be talking about. This is what they'd be going over, right? Here.
Exactly. Well, that's a good, I think, stopping point for today. And we will continue the discussion next week on the porch Friday. Are you, last question, are you superstitious? You going to make it through the day okay?
Yeah, you know, this is sad, but didn't even recognize it's the 13th.
So I guess
at all. So I can't, I mean, I'm not, it's just another day. That would be where my head would be at. Friday, 13th. So no, because I'm not even in recognition of it being. I think the only thing I really recognize is like New Year's, Christmas. Oh, I know those days, but beyond that, I'm like, eh, it doesn't really matter. Let's move on. And I have never in my life been superstitious. That's not, I didn't grow up in that culture, and so I'm like, I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I just, you know, just not a part of it. So.
Well, Hallmark hasn't made a card for it yet. It must not be that important. Or maybe they have, and I just haven't seen it.
That's another profound thought. If Hallmark has not made a card for it, is it really that important? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we need to go out and see if they got some coronavirus cards.
Cards and so forth. Or at least a Corona beer to inoculate yourself. All right, then we will see you guys on the porch next Friday. You'll find out they're usually posted Friday afternoon, but we'll be posting that out there on social media to let you know when it's ready. So, Roger, you have a good rest of the week or weekend, and I will see you and talk to you next week.
I love it. Look forward to it.
Oh, sounds good.
Good stuff.
Well, that's it for this week's On the Porch. We look forward to seeing everyone next week as we gather back on the porch and continue to talk about life. Again, remember, you can join us at www.facebook.com/southernporchlife.